has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we see.
Hello and welcome to the Convex Conversation with me, journalist Helen Fosbero.
No, I won't be afraid. Just as long.
When Prince Harry and Meghan Markle got married at Windsor Castle 3 years ago, one of the highlights for me was listening to the gospel choir. The beautiful sound of the Kingdom Choir's voices resonated through St George's Chapel and brought a group of singers and friends from in and around London instant notoriety.
Stand by me.
Their performance was a moving part of the service and celebrations, and game-changing for them and their conductor, founder and director, Karen Gibson.
All the mountains should crumble to the sea.
I'm delighted to welcome Karen as my guest this week. Karen, when I hear that, it still absolutely takes my breath away.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. That means a lot.
What was it like? Can you paint a picture of what the whole experience was like for us, Karen, and how it came about in the first place?
One day, I received a call out of the blue, and this was from a young lady who used to be in the choir about 10 years previously. And we didn't do much chit-chat because she said, I guess you wonder why I'm calling you. And I said, I am actually. And she said, well, Karen, you're going to get another call. I can't tell you what it's about, but it's going to be big. So we put down the phone and I waited a few days for this big call. Never happened. I wrote it off, you know. Things happen in the music industry and then all of a sudden they're not happening anymore. That's how it is. Anyway, I was riding home from work and I'm sure it was the number 87 bus. And I got this call and this woman with a very posh voice said, hello, is this Karen Gibson? I said, yes. And she said, my name is bloody, bloody, blah. And I would like to invite you to sing at the wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. Yeah, that was a real shock. It was completely out of the blue. Never expected it at all. So my first response was, you're joking, right? She didn't respond at all. And that's when I knew that she was being deadly serious. So that was the beginning of it all, the very beginning.
Oh, my goodness. Was it Prince Charles who'd selected you to sing?
Apparently so. Now, of course, I wasn't there. I don't know how these things run, but I've been told it was actually Prince Charles, who loves gospel choirs, apparently. And the funny thing is, previous to that, I had met Prince Charles with a school gospel choir. And he, after the performance was finished, he made a beeline for the choir and asked them the world of questions. So it seems to me that that might be the truth, that he really does love gospel choirs and young people, actually.
Oh, my goodness. So there you were on the 87 bus getting a call that I'm sure in that first instant you probably thought was some kind of wind-up. But fast forward to what happened next, how you worked out what to sing, and did you rehearse, and then the day itself?
Well, actually, first of all, I wasn't allowed to tell the choir members. So I had
great.
To keep it a secret. It was so hard. But at the same time, I had to find out if they were actually available on the day.
Did you just say that we've got something special? Are you available? Were you allowed to go that far?
Well, I don't know if I was allowed, but I did ring them up and say, what are you doing on this date? Are you free? Make sure you're free.
Make sure you're not watching the royal wedding on the television that day.
Yeah, yeah,
sorry to interrupt the royal wedding celebrations, but...
Yeah, so that's how I proceeded. And it was 30 of us who went. So I had to make 30 individual calls. Eventually, of course, I was allowed to tell them. And they came round to my house because that's where we used to rehearse, in my front room. And I broke the news to them there. And they were so excited. The giddiness in the room was unreal. And of course, rightly so. It's a huge honour and privilege.
It must have been absolutely amazing. And how did you decide what to sing, or did that come from the royal circles?
Yeah, you're actually right. That came from the royal couple themselves. They wanted to sing the Amen medley and Stand By Me. I wanted to sing something a bit more complex and a little bit more showy, because that's what we do in gospel. But this is what they asked for.
We've got a little clip lined up of your gospel version of that soul classic, Stand By Me. Should we have a little listen?
Yes, please. Whenever you're in trouble, won't you stand by me?
Stand by me. Stand by me. Stand by me.
Stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Stand by me.
Yeah. Stand by me. Stand by me.
Stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Stand by me.
Does it take you back, Karen, when you hear that?
It does. It does take me back. And actually, in my mind's eye, I always see the media clips of the choir standing, waiting, and in their finery and singing with their whole hearts. It takes me right back, yes.
How did you feel in those few seconds before the soloist opens the piece, knowing that you were being watched by millions, literally millions of people around the globe? What was going on in your tummy, Karen?
Well, first of all, the thing that was foremost in my mind was my feet, because they were killing me, because we had to stand for ages while we waited for the previous item to be finished. And I was wearing these impossible heels. But apart from that, I don't remember feeling nervous. I think I was just excited to present this gift to the couple. I couldn't wait, actually. I had to wait, but I really didn't want to. I think I was just excited. And I must also say that I had no idea that so many people would be watching. If you'd have asked me on the day, how many people do you think are watching? I think I would have said something like, 5 million, maybe. And that would have been my upper guess, but it was actually nearly 2 billion.
Gosh.
I don't know what that would have done to me, if I'm to be honest. I don't know.
The other thing, though, there you are standing in one of the most beautiful chapels I've ever been in. It's a stunning place where I think you really sense and feel the history. You could hear a pin drop as the choir was about to start. It was absolutely silent and this really air of expectation. But you were surrounded by everybody from Her Majesty the Queen, the Duke of Edinburgh, Kate and William, and the A-list of Hollywood. I mean, George Clooney was in the audience.
Yeah.
What was it like seeing all those people at such close quarters and seeing what they were wearing and being in that kind of special environment?
It was an electric atmosphere, I have to say. And just remembering, because we are seated at the back by the door where Meghan would enter, and just remember the hubbub of excitement. It was almost tangible in the air. And so we were as excited as anybody. Everybody was excited in the room. And you're right, it was dead silent when we were about to sing. And I remember actually it being silent, and then hearing the rustle as all these heads turned round to fasten their gaze on us. And still, I wasn't nervous, just excited to sing and just get it on and be part of this magnificent event.
And are the acoustics really beautiful in there?
Yes, absolutely stunning. I mean, we had gone down previously to test it out and see how a gospel choir would sound in such an environment. We had a keyboard player and it just sounded wonderful, just beautiful, magical, I think.
And what did it mean? You obviously saw Meghan at close quarters, certainly on my television screen. I thought she looked absolutely breathtaking. What did you think? And did she look even more beautiful in real life?
Absolutely. I remember in the week running up, there was some query about what the weather was going to be like. Well, as it happens, the sun was shining and streaming through the stained glass windows, and then the doors open and she steps through and she's standing there waiting for a moment. And she looked absolutely like an angel, like a princess. Stunning, really stunning.
And did he get any feedback from the royal couple, you know, perhaps via any of their advisors afterwards as to how they felt about the performance and how it had gone down?
Actually, yes. I believe they wrote us a letter. They wrote us a letter. Yeah, to thank us for our contribution and how lovely it was. On the day itself, I think Meghan kind of nodded her approval as she passed, and Prince Charles actually articulated his thanks to us. So that was very nice. It's nice to be seen.
And what about the choir members? What did they say to you afterwards, Karen, about their extraordinary experience?
I can't remember what they said, but I do believe that everybody was very happy, really honoured to have been there. I mean, that's a once in a lifetime event. You know, it's been 3 years now, and I don't think that the sense of awe and wonder has abated of that moment.
I think for me, watching a gospel choir sing at a royal event signified a real breath of fresh air as well, in a way, Karen, you know, blowing through a world that is steeped in tradition. I thought to see everybody embrace the gospel choir was a step in the right direction, if you like. Did you feel that too?
Yeah, I definitely felt like we were setting a precedent, that this is something never before done in this country, a black gospel choir. Because oddly enough, there has been a gospel choir singing at a royal wedding before. I think it's in Norway. It was a white gospel choir, very good choir, and headed by a friend of mine, actually. But yes, definitely a precedent. And I feel there was some sort of cultural shift. And the reason I say that is because of the comments that I would receive when I walked down the road. There was definitely a sort of consensus about ownership and inclusivity. One woman came and sat next to me. I was on the bus again. And she sat right next to me, got all excited. And she said, "We made it." Imagine that. We made it. And there was another lady who I met down the road who said to me, "It felt like it was our wedding." And I think it did a lot for not only black people, but people of colour. And 3 years later, people are still stopping me and saying, "That was wonderful. Thank you so much for your work. We love your music." It really seems to have impacted people in a way that I never, ever would have imagined.
I think it was very powerful, and I think it's very nice that it probably did originate from Prince Charles and his love of gospel choirs. I thought everybody looked so relaxed and enjoyed it, and it was just a joy to see. And when you and I bumped into each other, we were in the green room actually at the One Show, weren't we?
That's right.
Yeah. And I just saw you there and thought, oh my goodness, I so wanted to ask you all those stories, and there wasn't time. So I thought the best thing to do is to ask Karen to come and do the podcast. You mentioned your shoes, and obviously you are standing there for quite some time waiting with your shoes probably pinching. But, you know, when we get invited to a wedding, it always takes women, doesn't it, ages to work out what to wear and how to do your hair. And there you are again in front of your 2 billion people. You were stunning in your dusky pink outfit. Your hair is always lovely. I know this is a podcast, but I don't know whether you can describe your hair, because it's sensational, the tricks you do with your lovely hair.
Yeah.
But what went into the outfit and your hairstyle that day?
So first of all, we were acutely aware that we were going to a wedding and that the world would be watching. So I wouldn't trust myself to put together a uniform on a normal day. So we got in the help of a stylist, an amazing woman. Her name is Jeanette. So you can find her, Jeanette Young London. And she came up with the whole vision, put the mood board together, and she decided who would be wearing what. And it took some work. It wasn't easy, but I think she did a brilliant job. She really sorted us out, good and proper. And she advised us what the whole look should be like. So not just the dresses, not just the suit, but the footwear, how we were to wear our hair. And actually, it was my niece who did my hair.
Was it?
Yes, my niece. So she really did us proud with that. She's an amazing stylist.
You've got amazing hair. How do you do your hair? Because when I saw you, I think you've got braids all down one side, but it's incredible hair.
on top are extensions. My hair is naturally grey or silver, if you like. Some people like to call it that. So I buy the extensions to match the hair. And then my lovely niece, Nakella Allen, plaits it all in and devises a style. Sometimes I'll find her a picture. Sometimes she'll just make something up on the spot. But she's very, very good, very creative. I'm very blessed to have her as a niece.
It looks wonderful. I mean, before you and the choir performed at the royal wedding, I gather you were rehearsing in your front room. What was life like pre-wedding and how did you all get together? How did the Kingdom Choir come about?
The Kingdom Choir has actually been going for about 25, 26 years. And it came out of a London-wide choir that was directed by a young man called Noel Robinson, who's a very well-known praise and worship leader. So he was asked to head up and be the MD for a radio show called The Gospel Train. And this show would go into black majority churches and record the services. And that would be the program for the relevant Sunday. But of course, every church needs a choir to showcase. And so I was brought in to work with these choirs in these churches. And I would bring along some members of my choir, this London-wide choir, Noel's choir, really, from the Church of God of Prophecy. And we would help, we'd be ringers in these choirs. So after a while, we would be a standalone choir because we'd be singing from places like Greenbelt Christian Festival or Westminster Central Hall, where I'd have to call together members of this choir. And that's how we'd begun. But for ages, we didn't have a name because we were the host choir. And what happened was we got a call from BBC Songs of Praise and they said, we've heard your choir and we'd like you to come along and sing for our 35th birthday, our anniversary. I said, oh, lovely. Thank you so much. And they said, what's your name? We didn't have a name. So the producer said, well, you better get a name by tomorrow. And so when I went to sleep that night, I dreamt of the name. I literally dreamt of the name, the Kingdom Choir. I didn't like it. I didn't understand it. I didn't know what it meant. But that's the only thing I could think of. So when she called back the next day, that's the name I gave her. And that's how we were born.
And were you born really for pleasure, Karen? Was that the idea? Or was the idea to perform and to sell tickets?
That's a really good question. Nobody's ever asked that. Well, we were already singing. We had been singing in this choir called the District Choir. And we sung then because we loved to sing. But we were also aware of the impacting nature of gospel music. So we love to perform and to see people uplifted by the music. We love to see joy on their faces, maybe a sense of peace, a sense of hope. This is what gospel music does for people. So it was really the ministry side that we were all about. I would definitely say it wasn't about selling tickets. No, it was about the impact in people's hearts and in their lives.
That sounded awful. I didn't mean selling tickets in a hard kind of way. But one of my favourite moments, I lived in America for a few years for what was GMTV in those days, ITV's breakfast show, as their US correspondent. And one of my favourite memories from being out on the road was being in deepest Mississippi and doing a feature on the gospel choir there and being in the church with a very large choir filming them. And watching them perform and swaying with the congregation.
Yeah.
And I can't describe how powerful it was, moving, emotional, and in a way, healing, I think, Karen. I just wonder, can you vocalize what people get out of it when you're singing and, you know, you're filling a room with that beautiful music? What is it like for people? It's so stirring, isn't it?
It's very inspirational. I feel that people get inspired. I feel that they really feel a sense of joy. And people have said all sorts of things about listening to gospel music and even taking part in it. And these are people who are not necessarily Christians. They will say that gospel music has helped me get through a time of grief. Somebody wrote me and told me that they were able to start a business through joining because they joined a gospel choir. I had a student say that singing in a gospel choir gave them confidence to apply for a law degree.
Wow.
I've had teachers say that singing gospel music for an hour a week has guided some young girls down the right path and away from the path that they were taking. So, and I've had people in the audience write and say how mesmerized or how touched or moved that they have been through listening. I hear that over and over again.
It's definitely uplifting and something very, very special, and sort of leads to the question, really, how did you get into singing, Karen? You know, in the first place, where's your love of music come from?
Initially, I was sent to piano lessons by my mum at the age of 9. My sister and I, who's a year younger, who's also a choir conductor, actually.
Yeah.
And we were sent to piano lessons, really to keep us out of trouble. Because, you know, my mum was a single parent and she wanted to make sure that we didn't get ourselves into trouble, that we weren't taking interest in the wrong things. So she sent us to piano lessons. Eventually, I took up the oboe. My sister took up the clarinet and the saxophone. At the same time, we were going to this Pentecostal church, as I mentioned before, the Church of God of Prophecy. And music is very much a focus and a core of the church worship. So we were surrounded by this amazing singing and musicianship, and you learn to sing by singing. You learn to sing by listening. So we had this classical training, but we also had this oral culture that we were very much plugged into. And so eventually, because we had this training and because we had this informal training as well, we started to sing ourselves. We formed a gospel wind quintet.
Ah.
And then, yeah, a six-piece a cappella all-girls group.
Oh.
And some of them, most of them are in the Kingdom Choir today.
Oh, which fantastic.
Is beautiful. Yeah, it's lovely. For over 40 years of friendship.
Where were you growing up, Karen?
I grew up in Southwest London.
And as you developed in your music skills, did that become a career for you in your early 20s? Or did you go into a different form of work at that stage?
I was not focused at all, at all. I had no kind of vision for what I wanted to do. And if you'd asked me what I was going to be when I grew up, I would say, I don't know what I want to do. I went to university or polytechnic, as it was then. And then after that, I fell into a job at the council, working in IT, housekeeping and all sorts. I don't really know what I was doing for 11 years. And then after that, I was made redundant because the department was taken over and they said, you can work full time because of working part time because I was still doing music. You can stay on, but you have to work full time. Well, I just took the redundancy and ran. And I was redundant for 3 weeks. And then I got a call by a woman who I had run a gospel music workshop for in her school. And she said, we need somebody to come in and take a lesson for us in my school. I said, I've never taught before. She said, don't matter. We've got lesson plans. And so I worked in a school for 8 years after that.
Gosh.
And then after that, I became a full-time music practitioner, if you like.
Yeah.
Choir conductor working in gospel.
Life has changed. I mean, life's changed for all of you. The experiences that you've had post the royal wedding. I've got a list in front of me. It's endless. Let's start off with selling out the Royal Albert Hall was one highlight.
Yeah. Really beautiful. But before that was part of our UK tour. And I never imagined we'd be able to sell out the Royal Albert Hall. It was amazing to turn around and see all those people who'd come to see us and who were singing along and clapping along. And when it went dark, they were waving their phones. And that was that Stand By Me. They all took out their phones. It was stunning. That's a moment to remember.
And what happened first? What was the first big phone call with this exciting gig after the whole world had seen you sing?
First of all, it was management, called by management, Jonathan Shallet himself, who showed his interest. And then he got us a deal with Sony, which was wonderful. And we recorded the album with Sony, our Stand By Me album, 13 songs of love, hope and inspiration. And then after that, things really took off. There was so much radio and TV, and we went to Australia and sung at the Invictus Games. We did the UK tour. We went on a US tour, which was phenomenal. Just so many TV appearances. We did Strictly Come Dancing. We did Jonathan Ross Show. I can't remember it all, to be honest, but it was an amazing time.
Jonathan Shalit's a very dear friend of mine and former agent, actually, my former agent. So I'm very fond of Jonathan, and it doesn't surprise me that he'd have been watching the wedding that day, seeking out your number, because he's very smart and sharp and knows talent when he sees it, that's for sure. Not me, I'm not talking about, but definitely you.
Well,
but,
you as well.
But when you look back at things like Invictus Games and touring America, and what were some of those highlights? Or is it difficult to single them out because you did so much stuff, didn't you?
Yeah.
Or you are doing so much stuff.
Yeah, for Invictus Games, it was an absolute whirlwind. We were all over the place doing this show and that radio show and this appearance. We did so much, but it was actually lovely to meet Harry and Meghan again at the closing ceremony. They came over and said hello and asked us how we were. So that was really lovely. The US tour, again, another whirlwind, absolutely fabulous. Just wonderful to traverse the whole country and see the different, as you know, America is vast. A highlight for me was actually seeing my family come to the shows who I hadn't seen for. They surprised me. I thought they weren't coming. That was a highlight for me personally. The whole tour was brilliant.
Didn't you sing at the Hollywood Bowl as well?
We did. And we sung with Gladys Knight.
Gladys Knight. Love a bit of Gladys Knight.
Yeah, she's a bit of a childhood hero of mine. That was a highlight of the tour.
I was looking at your Instagram only yesterday, and you put a picture up from, I think it was 2 years ago, in Hyde Park with the legend that is Miss Barbara Streisand. What was that like?
That was a real honour. It was a wonderful day, great weather, great crowds, people as far as the eye can see. That was a beautiful highlight of the festival season. I love the festival season.
And you mentioned you got the deal with Sony for the album. That must have been quite an experience, being in the recording studio all together as a choir and putting that together. Was that quite an interesting learning curve and an interesting experience for you?
To be fair, lots of us had done studio work before, done lots of it. The choir is made up of people who've got careers, singing careers, or musical teaching careers in their own right. So being in the studio was nothing new for lots of us, but the cause for which we were recording, that was new. Having this album that would go nationwide, that would go worldwide, and for Sony, that was very, very exciting indeed. That was a new experience.
I hope you weren't on the number 87 when you played it for the first time. How did it feel, and where were you when you got the press disc, if you like, and put it on for the first time, the finished product?
It was amazing, just unbelievable really, and a little bit surreal that, first of all, that we were known by the country at large, and then we get to put out this music for everybody to hear, because lots of us have put out music before, including the Kingdom Choir. But, you know, it's within our own circles, you know, within the gospel industry, within the gospel circuit, if you like. But this was new. This was very new and quite scary, I have to say.
Yeah, I bet you got some good feedback, though. Tell me about your charity single. You recorded Real Love for a charity that I presume is dear to your heart, Karen. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. Before we had the opportunity to record that, there were lots of causes that we wanted to really contribute to. Lots of us have worked with young people, you know, homelessness, but refuge came up, abuse of women and children. And so we thought we'd reach out to refuge and form this partnership, if you like, because we were in the lockdown when we recorded it, actually. And if we were in a lockdown, we actually had no idea of what it's like to be in a lockdown with your abuser. So it became a cause that we became very passionate about.
And how did you choose Real Love as the single?
It's a single that we had recorded before. We actually sang it on tour in the UK and the US. I would sing it at the end. And the response every time we sung it was the same. People would be up out of their chairs, they'd be singing, they'd be dancing, they'd be waving their hands. It was very, very powerful. And it seemed to us that at a time when people were in lockdown, people were confused, the incidences of mental health was on the increase, as was abuse. It seemed that we wanted to release something that would cheer people's spirits. So we chose the song that on the tour really seemed to have a real impact and really seemed to do that for people. And we hope that Real Love, the sentiment and the music and the joy, would really touch people.
The gospel, oh, real love, real love.
went from performing for British royalty and celebrities to being under intense pressure, cooking for cooking's royalty, I guess, John Tarrood and Greg Wallace in Celebrity MasterChef.
Yes.
As somebody who is a really rubbish in the kitchen, what was that like for you? And were you a good cook before you went in?
You know, I've done TV before. Hands down, this was the most difficult thing I've ever done on TV. And it's simply because it wasn't anything to do with music and it wasn't anything to do with faith, which are my comfort zones. This was cooking. And I could cook before. Definitely, I could cook. So that first show where you just had to go and choose ingredients and cook something out of the air, it wasn't too bad, that dish. But the tasks and the challenges, they were hair-raising for me. Honestly, it was really very challenging for me. I enjoyed it. I didn't want to do it, I have to say.
Did you not?
No, I was too scared. No, far too scared, because it was completely out of my comfort zone.
In fact, when I met you at the One Show, I was with my friend Amma, who, as you know, was on the same series as you, and he was Celebrity MasterChef's first blind contestant.
Amazing.
And he jokes about when his agent rang him and he said, well, there's two problems. First of all, I can't cook. And secondly, I'm blind. And she sort of ignored both of those and put him on. So he actually had started from a real standing start because he couldn't cook either. But even if you can cook, when you're at home as a viewer watching it on the sofa, the thing that makes my heart race is the against the clock bit, because there doesn't seem enough time, even if you know what you're doing. Was that one of the big pressures, Karen, that, you know, apart from the fact you're being filmed and everything and the nation's watching you, that the clock's ticking down? There doesn't seem enough time to actually get the dish prepared.
Well, yeah, you're completely right. And some of the dishes were more challenging than others. And that's what really got me out of the show, because I ran out of time with my duck dish.
Your duck ran out of the door.
Yes, ran out of the door. I possibly bit of more than I could chew. Excuse me. That was very hard, very pressurizing. And not only that, it's having the judges, John and Greg, come around, look at what you're doing. You're trying to cook and they're trying to talk to you, and you have to put your utensils down and focus on them, and you just want to get on with the dish. It was all very character building, shall we just call it that.
Yes, and there's pressure from other contestants as well. I think England hockey star Sam Quek seemed to keep you on your toes, didn't she?
Oh, she really did. She was amazing. And she had a background in cooking because I believe her brother owns a restaurant. And she so had that kind of Asian cooking. She had that down on point. And so she was very good. She was one to watch. And she got very far, actually.
Would you do Strictly if you were asked? Come on, Karen.
I'm afraid to say this and be recorded. I have actually thought about it. I think I'd have to really do lots of exercise first. Lots of practice and get my twinkle toes going.
Get your twinkle toes going. Just don't wear the shoes that you had on in St. George's Chapel is my top advice.
Oh, no way.
It's really nice to see that the choir's started to be out and about and performing again. That must feel wonderful after the last 18 months. Tell us what you're up to for the next few weeks.
Yeah, so we are singing at Pub in the Park. So we were in Bath a couple of weeks ago. We'll be in Chiswick and we'll be in St. Albans. And it is absolutely wonderful to be out again. To be honest, for the first one in Bath, I thought there was going to be five people in a sodden field. The weather had been awful. We're still easing out of lockdown. I didn't know how people feel about it. But it was a great crowd and a huge success. And it's been very healing for the choir to be able to perform together again, I would say. It's what we're used to doing. And I feel like we are wired to do it in great connection. And it brings us alive.
Have you been rehearsing through lockdown? Were you rehearsing over Zoom and things like that?
What we'd do was we'd meet on Zoom, not necessarily to rehearse. We did try it and it was an abysmal failure. Nobody liked it because, as I say, we're wise for connection, you know, real proper connection. It's important. But we would meet. We did record quite a few virtual videos and that was lovely. But the rehearsing bit, it wasn't our thing at all.
No, it's all about how it feels, isn't it? You need to feel the other voices in the room, I guess. And I hear you've got a date with my favourite soprano, Catherine Jenkins.
We do, on the 25th of July in, I think it's Malden Park. So I'm looking forward to that. She's an amazing lady, isn't she?
She's very, an amazing very... lady and a beautiful singer. And you're in my hood. You mentioned Chiswick there. I live in West London in Shepherd's Bush.
Right.
You're in my hood in September, so I'm definitely going to bring my kids and come and say hello again in person.
Yes, please. That's all right. Please do.
Thank you so much for spending time with us today, Karen.
You're welcome.
Hopefully we will say hello in September. And I think instead of using our usual podcast music, when we've got access to your beautiful gospel songs, we're going to go out on Look Up. It's been really lovely of you to join us today, and thank you, because I know you're really, really busy. Lovely to chat and lovely to hear all your stories. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Helen. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
You are so welcome. You've been listening to Karen Gibson, MBE, founder and director of the Kingdom Choir. The choir are back out performing now, so do check out their website if you fancy going along in person, kingdomchoir.com. Download and subscribe to our series at convex.podbean.com or search the Convex Conversation on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts, or just ask Alexa. I'll be back next week with another great guest, so I look forward to seeing you then. Bye for now.